Hi, it's Tony Bruschi from Real Ghost Stories Online, inviting you to subscribe to our other podcast called The Grave Talks. It's where I sit down and interview individuals who've had extreme paranormal situations happen to them in their lives. Just search The Grave Talks on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. Be sure to press subscribe and give us some stars to help spread the word that this show exists. Now, here's a 15-minute preview of The Grave Talks. Today on The Grave Talks, the Queen Mary. The Queen Mary is one of the last remaining ocean liners of a time gone by. The Queen Mary still holds the grandeur of a bygone era, as well as some of the passengers of that time. Many stories have been told over the last 40 years of the haunted Queen Mary and its storied past. What do these souls seek from the living? It's a question we try to answer on today's episode of The Grave Talks as we talk with Commodore Everett Horde of the Queen Mary. With a ship so old, it's easy to understand how rumors can easily become legends over time. However, one cannot deny the paranormal activity and hard evidence that's been collected on board the Queen Mary over the years. Sounds of men screaming in pain, faint noises of grand parties in an empty ballroom, children splashing and playing in a pool that had been emptied of water long, long ago. What's the source of such paranormal activity? Sometimes it's easy to feel that we need to help a ghost cross over. However, what if that spirit's already crossed over to a place they want to be? What if that place is on board a ship that they loved in life? What if they're already at home and we're the ones invading their space? We may call it the haunted Queen Mary. They may simply call it their eternal home. Countless investigations have been conducted on board the historic ship, many producing compelling evidence for life beyond the grave. Lives that continue to be lived on board one of the most treasured ocean liners of all time. Today on The Grave Talks, an interview and a discussion that I have wanted to have for many years, as we discuss the haunted Queen Mary.
Well, Tony, the Queen Mary was conceived all the way back in the late 1920s, 1926 to be exact, between 1926 and 1930. The designs were drafted and refined, and the keel was laid in 1930. A ship would have been completed in 1934 had the Great Depression not interrupted the construction, but because of a two-year delay, the maiden voyage was not until 1936. But when you look at the Queen Mary, you're really only seeing half the idea. The original idea that Cunard had in mind was that there would be two of the great ships of equal size and speed capability so that a weekly service could be run across the North Atlantic using just the two ships. They would be the largest and fastest ships on the planet, but they were the smallest and slowest ships that could do the job, and that is maintain a weekly service. And the reason for that statement is, in those days, it took a vessel of 1,000 feet in length to house enough machinery to cause the nearly 30-knot speed capabilities that would be needed to maintain that schedule for a five-day crossing year in and year out. And so the Queen Mary, as I said, the keel was laid to the Queen Mary on 1st of December, 1930. On the 10th of December, 1931, work was suspended. Most thought the ship would be scrapped before it ever saw the water. It didn't even have a name. It was only known as job number 534. And so over the next 2 years, the unfinished skeleton of the ship not only shouted failure to Cunard, to John Brown Ship Company in Scotland where it was being built, but to the world. Because in those days, before the advent of jet travel, the countries having these capital ships to cross the Atlantic and were symbols of not only maritime power, but of overall power, a symbol of power. And so work had to be restarted on the 534, which the Queen Mary was called. And that would come at a cost. The British government was approached for grants or loans White Star Line at the same time over in Belfast had a ship on the waves that would have been called Oceanic, also over 1,000 feet. Rather than have the government assist one company and not the other, the British government required that Cunard and White Star merge, form one solid, stable company, not dissecting the North Atlantic trade, and with that, they made loans to the new company, Cunard White Star, to finish the 534. The ship in Ireland, which would have been called Oceanic, was scrapped. So that took place in April of 1934. Work was restarted. By the late summer of 1934, the hull was nearly ready to launch into the River Clyde in Scotland, and still there was no name. There was a lot of betting going on around the country. Bookmakers were holding in first place the name Queen Victoria. And, of course, that name would have significance because in those days they considered Queen Victoria to be England's greatest queen. And also, she was the king's grandmother. And that would require royal permission. So overtures were sent out, and eventually one of the directors were invited to shoot grouse with the king. And while the two gentlemen are out shooting birds, the king makes a nice shot and lays his shotgun down and said to the director, "Well, Royden, how's that ship of yours coming along?" He said, "Oh, yes, sir, it's coming along quite nicely. And we'd like to name it after England's greatest queen." And with that, the king said, "Oh, that's the finest compliment anyone has ever paid my wife and I. I'll ask her permission as soon as I get home." So we have the Queen Mary and not the Queen Victoria. But so, as it turned out, one of the most successful things about the Queen Mary and her sister, which would be built 4 years later, the Queen Elizabeth, was the success in the naming. Because being named after two living queen consorts, it guaranteed the two vessels an instant popularity on the North Atlantic.
When she finally hit the water and was out on the open sea, what was life like on board the Queen Mary?
With the maiden voyage starting in 1936, the Queen Mary would instantly become the glamour girl of the North Atlantic. She was slightly smaller than the French Normandy, but had all the mystique of any ship that you might imagine after being named after a member of the royal family. John F. Kennedy would travel in the Queen Mary in the 1930s, Fred Astaire, Marlena Dietrich, Clark Gable. She would become the fastest ship in the North Atlantic. On the first occasion in 1936 in August, she would wrest the blue ribbon from the Normandy, and then again the Normandy would take it back, but in 1938 in August, the Queen Mary crossed the Atlantic in just 3 days, 20 hours and 42 minutes, with a record-breaking speed of 31.69 knots. And, of course, that record would stand all the way until 1952. And then, of course, with all of the glamour and the halcyon days of the 1930s coming to a close, war clouds were brewing in Europe. On the 3rd of September, 1939, the ship was a day and a half out of New York when a coded message was received in the wheelhouse. Commodore Robert Irving was in command by then, and he was ordered to put his vessel on full war alert. All 2,000 portholes and windows were painted shut with blackout paint loaded in Southampton. There had been 1,275 gas masks for the crew also loaded on board. So that day, the Cunard liner Bosnia and another ship, Athena, had been torpedoed. The BBC broadcast had sent it throughout the ship. Travelers in the Queen Mary were hysterical. Traveling in the ship that time was Bob and Dolores Hope. Also, J.P. Morgan was a passenger on that voyage. The ship was overloaded, 2,300 passengers. People were sleeping in public rooms and corridors. Bob Hope actually put on an impromptu act in the lounge trying to calm people down, and he said people were so upset that no one would laugh at his jokes. But the ship would eventually arrive a day and a half later, successfully in New York. She would be hailed there by the Cunard line. In March of 1940, the ship would be called up to do trooping service. By this time, the newly finished Queen Elizabeth had arrived, but it was the Mary that started trooping first. The early voyages would take her from Boston down into Australia to carry the Australian army up into the Red Sea to fight against General Rommel in northern Africa. After that business was taken care of, the Anzacs were returned to Australia, and both queens were put on the North Atlantic. And Churchill went and had a visit with General Marshall and President Roosevelt. And Marshall put to Churchill, "How many should we put on them?" talking about the two queens. And Churchill's reply is rather chilling. He said, "Well, if this were only an exercise, you should only put on them what the boats and the rafts can take off. But because of the gravity of the Battle of Britain and the Battle of the Atlantic, we should put all on them that they can carry. But I leave it to yourselves to judge the risks that you will run." And they decided to put at the maximum amount of troops on the Queen Mary. In the summer months, she would carry 15,000 at a time. This ship still holds the world's record for more human beings ever carried on a single crossing in an ocean vessel in the history of the sea. And in July of 1943, the Queen Mary carried 16,683 souls from New York to Scotland.
Obviously, a lot of drama going on, lots of emotions running very, very high on board this amazing ship that many traveled on in good times. And then traveling on for a very, very different reason out of necessity during a very tense time in our history. On board the ship, what does it look like once it becomes a troop ship and a transport ship? How much of the ship changes to accommodate that style of transport and that many people being on board?
The Queen Mary's entrance into the trooping service, the refits were done gradually. In the early days, the ship would only carry about 5,000 troops. The swimming pools were still in use, and they almost had the ship under optimum conditions. But as the severity of the war increased, the need to carry more and more troops took place. So eventually, there were bits and pieces of the ship scattered all around the world, where Sydney, Singapore, where the ship had been dry docked early in the war, things that were removable, like the china and the crystal, and a lot of the furniture that wasn't built in was taken out of the ship. A lot of the artwork was covered up with plywood. Miraculously, and almost strangely, a lot of the woodwork in the ship itself was left exposed. So Commodore James Bissett, being a very resourceful captain and one of the wartime captains of the Queen Mary, he would offer every division commander that brought a division of troops on board, he said, "I give you your troops the miles of teak railings around the outside of the ship to carve up as they like, but please do not destroy the precious woods in the ship, because when the war is complete, the ship will need to go back into service as quickly as possible." But as you can imagine, to carry 15,000 troops, standee bunks were put in every corner. Makeshift showers were along the promenade deck. It really was a fair amount of change in the bunking system. When carrying 15,000 troops, there were not enough bunks for all of them to lay down at once. So they had a bunking system which was nicknamed hot bunking. A GI would get that bunk for 6 hours. He'd have to give it up and give it to someone else and find a place in an alleyway or on deck to stay until it was his turn. The first class restaurant was used to mess some 2,500 troops at a time. There were two meals a day. Eggs were boiled using 55-gallon drums, 1,000 at a time, with steam jetted up from the boiler rooms. Officers had it a little better. The first class lounge was retained as an officer's club. The officers also ate at tables in the cabin class dining room and were served from and were able to order from Cunard menus. So there were some changes in the accommodations of the ship. The swimming pool was floored over, and after that would house anywhere from 150 to 200 GIs.
I hope you enjoyed your 15-minute preview of our new podcast, The Grave Talks. Be sure to subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download podcasts to not miss any episode of the show. New episodes every single Monday. Just search for The Grave Talks and then press subscribe. Give us a review while you're at it and some stars that will help us grow in the rankings and let other folks know that the show exists to make an even better show for you. The Grave Talks. Check it out at thegravetalks.com.